One by one, the housemates drink their dry lips. It has been 24 hours, and the likelihood of its being much longer weighs on all their minds. They are thirsty.
Can we drink the river water? Felix asks.
Bacteria, Don says.
That depends, Tom says, on how cold the water is, how deep, how fast it flows.
And anyway, Jules said, if something got into the well, I'm sure it's gotten into the river.
Contamination, Mallory thinks. It's the word of the hour. In the cellar are 3 buckets of urine and feces. Nobody wants to take them outside. Nobody wants to go out there at all today. The smell is strong in the kitchen and hangs faintly in the living room.
I would drink the river water, Cheryl says. I'd chance it.
You'd go out there? Olympia asks. There could be something standing right on the other side of the door.
I don't know what I heard, Felix says.
He's repeated this many times. He said he feels guilty for scaring everybody.
It was probably a person, Don says. Probably somebody looking to rob us.
Do we have to figure this out right now? Jules asks. It's been one day. We haven't heard anything. Let's wait. One more day. See if we feel better.
I'd even drink from the buckets, Cheryl says. It's a well, for fuck's sake. Animals fall into wells all the time. They die down there. We've probably been drinking dead animal water this whole time.
The water in this neighborhood has always been good, Olympia says.
Mallory gets up. She walks to the kitchen's entrance. The water glistens at the rim of the wood bucket, shines in the one of metal.
What would it do to us? She thinks.
Can you imagine drinking a little part of one? Tom asks.
Mallory turns. He is standing beside her. His shoulder rubs against hers in the doorway.
I can't do it, Tom.
I wouldn't ask you to. But I can ask myself.
When Mallory looks him in the eye, she knows he is serious.
Tom.
Tom turns to face the others in the dining room.
I'll drink it, he says. We don't need a champion, Don says. I'm not looking to be one, Don. I'm thirsty.
The housemates are quiet. Mallory sees the same thing in their faces that she's feeling herself. For as scared as she is, she wants someone to drink it.
This is insane, Felix says. Come on, Tom. We can figure something else out.
Tom steps into the dining room. At the table, he looks Felix in the eye.
Lock me in the cellar. I'll drink it down there.
You'll go mad from the smell, Cheryl says.
Tom smiles sadly.
We have a well right in our backyard, he says. If we can't use it, we can't use anything. Let me do this.
You know who you sound like, Don asks.
Tom waits.
You sound like George, except he had a theory.
Tom looks to the dining room table, set against the window.
We've been here for months, he says. If something got in the well yesterday, it probably got in there before.
You're rationalizing, Mallory says.
Tom answers her without turning to face her.
Is there any option? Sure, the river. But we could get sick, real sick. We don't have any medicine. All we've had so far is the water from the well. It's the only medicine we've got. What else can we do? Walk to the next well? And then what? Hope nothing got into that one?
Mallory watches as one by one the housemates acquiesce. The natural rebellion in Don's face gives way to concern. The fear in Olympia's eyes turns to guilt. As for herself, Mallory doesn't want him to do it. For the first time since arriving at the house, Tom's role, how integral he is to everything that happens here, is blinding. But instead of stopping him, he inspires her. And she helps. "Not the cellar," she says. "What if you went mad down there and destroyed our food stock?"
Tom faces her. "All right," he says. "Then the attic."
"A leap from that window is a lot higher than the one from down here."
Tom stares into Mallory's eyes. "I'll make a compromise," he says. "The second floor. You gotta lock me somewhere, and there's no place down here."
"You can use my room."
"That room," Don says, "is the very one George used to watch the video."
Mallory looks back to Tom. "I didn't know that."
"Let's do it," Tom says.
He pauses, just a moment, before passing Mallory and entering the kitchen. Mallory follows. The housemates file in behind them. When he pulls a glass from the cupboard, Mallory gently grabs his arm. "Drink it through this," she says. She hands him a coffee filter. "I don't know. A filter. Who knows?" Tom takes it. He looks her in the eye. Then he dunks the glass into the wooden well bucket. When he pulls it out, he holds it up. The housemates stand in a semicircle around it. They stare at the contents of the glass. The details of Felix's story chill Mallory all over again. Carrying the glass, Tom leaves the kitchen. Jules gathers some rope from the kitchen pantry and follows him. The other housemates do not speak. Mallory places one hand on her belly and the other on the counter. Then she lifts it quickly, as if she's just put her hand in a deadly substance.
Contamination.
But there was no water where she put her hand. Upstairs, the door to her bedroom closes. She listens as Jules ties the rope around the doorknob and fastens it to the railing of the staircase. Now Tom is locked in. Like George. Felix paces. Don leans against the wall, arms crossed, staring at the floor. When Jules returns, Victor goes to him. A sound comes from upstairs. Mallory gasps. The housemates look to the ceiling. They wait. They listen. Felix moves as if he's going to go up there. Then he stops.
"He must have drunk it already," Don says quietly.
Mallory steps to the entrance of the living room. There, 10 feet away, is the foot of the stairs. There is only silence.
Then there is a knock. And Tom yells.
Tom yells. Tom yells. Tom yells. Tom. Mallory is already moving to the stairs, but Jules passes her.
"Stay here," he commands. She watches him climb the stairs. "Tom!" "Jules, I'm okay."
At the sound of Tom's voice, Mallory exhales. She reaches for the railing to steady herself.
"Did you drink it?" Jules says through the door. "I did. I drank it. I'm fine."
The other housemates are gathered behind her now. They begin talking. Quietly at first, then excitedly. Upstairs, Jules unties the rope. Tom emerges from the bedroom, holding the empty glass before him.
"What was it like?"
Olympia asks. Mallory smiles. So do the others. It's funny, in a dark way right now, asking what drinking a glass of water was like.
"Well," Tom says, descending, "it was probably the best glass of water I've ever had." When he reaches the bottom, he looks Mallory in the eye.
I liked the filter idea, he says.
When he passes her, he sets the glass on the end table with the telephone. Then he turns to the others.
Let's put the furniture back in order. Let's put this place back together again.
16. On the river, Mallory feels the heat of the midday sun. Instead of bringing her peace, it reminds her how visible they must be.
Mommy?
The boy whispers. Mallory leans forward. Her palm is pierced by a splinter from the oar. This makes three.
What is it?
Shh, the boy says. Mallory stops rowing. She is listening.
The boy is right.
Something moves on land to their left. Sticks break. More than one.
Man in the boat, Mallory's mind screams, saw something on this river.
Could it be him? Could he be out in the woods? Would he be after her? Waiting for her to get stuck? Ready to rip off her blindfold? The children's? More sticks break. It moves slowly. Mallory thinks of the house they've left behind. They were safe there. Why did they leave? Is the place they are heading going to be any safer? How could it be? In a world where you can't open your eyes, isn't a blindfold all you could ever hope for?
We left because some people choose to wait for news and others make their own. Like Tom used to say.
Mallory, she knows, will never stop being inspired by him.
The very thought of him here on the river brings her hope. Tom, she wants to tell him, your ideas were good.
Boy, she whispers, paddling again, fearful that they are too close to the left bank.
What do you hear? It's close, Mommy.
Then,
I'm scared.
There is a moment of silence. In it, Mallory imagines a danger only inches away. She stops paddling again to listen better. She cranes her neck to the left. The front of the rowboat connects with something hard. Mallory shrieks. The children scream.
We've run into the bank.
Mallory jabs a paddle at where she thinks the mud is, but she does not connect.
Leave us alone, she yells, her face contorted.
Suddenly, she longs for the walls of the house. There are no walls on this river, no cellar beneath them, no attic above.
Mommy!
As the girl screams for her, something breaks through the branches, something big. Mallory jabs the paddle again, but it only breaks the water. She grabs the boy and girl and pulls them close. She hears a growl.
Mommy!
Quiet, she yells, pulling the girl even closer.
Is it the man? Deranged? Do the creatures growl? Do they make any noise at all?
A second growl now, and suddenly Mallory understands what it is. It's dog-like. Canine.
Wolves.
She doesn't have time to coil before a wolf's claw slashes her shoulder. She screams. Immediately, she feels the warm blood cascading the length of her arm. Cold water sloshes in the rowboat's bottom. Urine, too.
They smell it on us,
Mallory thinks, frantic, turning her head in every direction and aimlessly wielding the paddle.
They know we can't defend ourselves.
She hears another low growling. It's a pack. The rowboat's tip is snagged on something. Mallory can't find it with her paddle, but the boat swivels, as if the wolves would have taken a hold of the bow.
They could jump in. They could jump in!
Crawl to the front of the boat. You have to set it free. Swinging the paddle above the heads of the children, screaming, Mallory rises. The boat leans to the right. She thinks they're going to tip. She steadies herself. The wolves snarl. Her shoulder is hot with a kind of pain she has never experienced before. Holding it, blindly, wildly, she waves a paddle at the boat's tip. But she cannot reach it, so she steps forward.
Mommy!
She drops to her knees. The boy is beside her now. He's holding onto her shirt.
I need you to let go,
she yells. Something jumps into the water. Mallory turns her head toward the sound.
How shallow is it here? Can they get in the boat? Can the wolves get in the boat?
Turning quickly, she crawls to the end of the rowboat and reaches out into the darkness. The children scream behind her. Water splashes. The boat rocks. Wolves bark. And in the darkness of her own closed eyes, Mallory's hand feels a stump. She yells as she reaches with both arms now. Her left shoulder aches. She feels the frigid October air on her shredded skin. With her second hand, she feels a second stump.
We're wedged, that's all. We're wedged!
As she pushes hard against the two stumps, something bangs against the boat. She can hear claws, scratching, trying to climb in. The boat grates against the wood. Water splashes. Mallory hears it from every direction. There's another growl, and heat, too. Something is close to her face. She screams loudly and pushes. Then, they are free. Turning fast, Mallory stumbles and falls into the middle bench.
Boy! She screams. Mommy!
Then she reaches for the girl and finds she is pressed against the middle bench.
Are you two all right? Speak to me. I'm scared,
the girl says.
I'm fine, Mommy,
the boy says. Mallory is paddling hard. Her left shoulder, already pressed past the point of exhaustion, resists, but she forces it to work. Mallory paddles. The children are tucked at her knees and feet. The water breaks beneath the wood. She paddles. What else can she do? What else can she do but paddle? The wolves could be coming. How shallow is the river here? Mallory paddles. It feels like her arm is dangling from her body, but she paddles. The place she is taking the children to may no longer exist. The excruciating trip, blindly taking the river, could result in nothing. When they get there, down the river, will they be safe? What if what she's looking for isn't there? 17.
They're scared of us,
Olympia suddenly says. What do you mean? Mallory asks. The two are sitting together on the third step up the staircase.
Our housemates. They're scared of our bellies. And I know why. It's because one day they're going to have to deliver these babies.
Mallory looks into the living room. She's been at the house for 2 months. She is 5 months pregnant. She, too, has thought of this. Of course she has.
Who do you think will do it?
Olympia asks, her wide, innocent eyes trained on Mallory.
Tom, Mallory says. Okay. But I'd feel a lot better if there was a doctor in the house.
This thought is always looming for Mallory. The inevitable day she gives birth. No doctors, no medicine, no friends or family. She tries to imagine it as a quick experience. Something that will happen fast and be over with. She pictures the moment her water breaks, then imagines holding the baby. She doesn't want to think about what will happen in between. The others are gathered in the living room. The morning's chores are finished. All day, Mallory has had a sense that Tom is working something out. He's been distant, isolated with his thoughts. Now he stands in the center of the living room, every housemaid in earshot, and reveals what's been on his mind. It's exactly what Mallory was hoping it wasn't.
I've got a plan, he says.
Oh? Don asks.
Yes.
Tom pauses, as if making sure of what he's about to say one final time. We need guides.
What do you mean?
Felix asks. I mean, I'm going to go looking for dogs.
Mallory gets up from the stairs and walks to the entrance of the living room. Just like the others, the idea of Tom leaving the house has dramatically gotten her attention.
Dogs?
Don asks.
Yes, Tom says. Strays. Former pets. There must be hundreds out there. Loose, or stuck inside a home they can't get out of. If we're going to go on stock runs, which we all know we're going to have to do, I'd like us to have help. Dogs could warn us.
Tom, we don't know the effect they have on animals,
Jules says.
I know, but we can't sit still.
The tension in the room has risen.
You're crazy, Don says. You're really thinking of going out there.
We'll bring weapons, Tom says.
Don leans forward in the easy chair.
What exactly are you thinking of here?
I've been working on helmets, Tom says, to protect our blindfolds. We'll carry butcher knives. The dogs could lead us.
If one goes mad, let the leash go. If the animal comes after you, kill it with a knife. Blind.
Yes, blind.
I don't like the sound of this at all,
Don says. Why not?
There could be maniacs out there, criminals. The streets aren't what they used to be, Tom. We're not in suburbia anymore. We're in chaos.
Well, something has to change, Tom says. We need to make progress. Otherwise, we're waiting for news in a world where there is no longer any news. Don looks to the carpet, then back to Tom.
It's too dangerous. There's just no reason for it.
There's every reason for it. I say we wait. Wait for what?
Help. Something.
Tom looks to the blankets covering the windows.
There's no help coming, Don.
That doesn't mean we should run outside looking for it.
We'll vote, Tom says.
Don looks to the faces of the other housemates. It's clear he's looking for someone to agree with him.
A vote, Don says. I don't like that idea at all either.
Why not?
Felix says. Because, Felix, we're not talking about which buckets we drink from and which ones we piss in. We're talking about one or more of us leaving the house for no good reason.
It's not no good reason, Tom says. Think of the dogs as an alarm system.
Felix heard something by the well 2 weeks ago. Was it an animal? Was it a man? Was it a creature?
The right dog might have barked. I'm talking about searching our block. Maybe the next one, too.
Give us 12 hours. That's all I'm asking. 12 hours, Mallory thinks. Getting water from the well takes only half of one. But the number, finite as it is, calms her.
I don't see why we need to round up strays at all, Don says.
He fans a hand toward Victor at Jules's feet.
We've got one right here. Let's train him.
No way,
Jules says, rising now.
Why not?
I didn't bring him here so he could be a sacrifice. Until we know how dogs are affected, I'm not agreeing to that.
Sacrifice, Don says. Good choice of words.
The answer is no, Jules says.
Don turns to Tom. You see, the one dog owner we have in the house is even against it.
I didn't say I was against Tom's idea, Jules says.
Don looks around the room.
So, is everyone for this, then? Really? All of you think it's a good idea.
Olympia looks to Mallory, wide-eyed. Don, seeing an opportunity for an ally, approaches her.
What do you think, Olympia?
He demands.
Well, I don't know.
Don, Tom says, we'll take a legitimate vote. I'm for it, Felix says.
Mallory looks around the living room.
I'm for it, too, Jules says.
I'm in, Cheryl says.
Tom turns to Don. As he does, Mallory feels something sink inside her.
The house, Mallory realizes, needs him.
I'll go with you, Jules says. If I'm not going to let you use my dog, I can at least help you round up others.
Don shakes his head.
You guys are fucking nuts. Then let's start making you a helmet, too, Tom says, planting a hand on Jules's shoulder.
By the next morning, Tom and Jules are putting the finishing touches on the second helmet. They are leaving today. For Mallory, it is all moving too fast. They just voted on them leaving, but do they have to leave right away? Don makes no move to hide his feelings. The others, like Mallory, are hopeful. It is difficult, Mallory knows, not to be swept up in Tom's energy. If it were Don about to leave, she might have less faith in his returning with seeing-eye dogs. But Tom has an energy about him. When he says he's going to do something, it feels like it's already done. Mallory watches from the couch. Both with child and at last a baby talk about the stress link between mother and child. Mallory doesn't want her baby to feel the anxiety she feels now, watching Tom prepare to leave the house. There are two duffel bags against the wall. Both are half-stocked with canned goods, flashlights, and blankets. Beside them are big knives and the former legs of a kitchen stool, chiseled now into sharp stakes. They will use the broomsticks as walking sticks.
Maybe, Olympia says, animals can't go mad because their brains are too small.
By the expression on Don's face, it looks like he might say something, but he holds his tongue.
It's possible that animals don't have the capacity to go mad, Tom says, adjusting a helmet strap. Maybe a thing has to be smart enough to lose its mind. Well, I would like to know something like that before I go out there, Don says. Maybe, Tom continues, there are degrees of insanity. I'm instantly curious to know how the creatures affect people who are already insane. Why don't you round up some of them, too? Don huffs. Are you sure you want to risk your life on the hope that animals aren't as smart as us?
Tom looks him in the eye.
I'd like to tell you I have more respect for animals than that, Don. But right now, all I care about is surviving.
At last, Jules straps his helmet on. He turns his head to see how it fits. The back of it snaps apart, and the whole thing falls to his feet. Don slowly shakes his head.
Damn it, Tom says, picking up the pieces. I had that worked out. Don't worry, Jules.
Lifting the pieces, Tom reassembles them, then fortifies the strap with a second one. He places it upon Jules's head.
There. All better.
With these words, Mallory feels ill. She has known all morning that Tom and Jules would be leaving, but the moment seems to come too quickly.
Don't go, she wants to say to Tom. We need you. I need you.
But she understands that the reason the house needs Tom is because he's the kind of man who would do what he is doing today. By the wall, Felix and Cheryl help Tom and Jules strap the duffel bags to their backs. Tom is jabbing at the air with one of the stakes. Mallory feels a second wave of nausea. There is no greater reminder of the horror of this new world than seeing Tom and Jules prepared the way they are for a walk around the block. Blindfolded, armed, they look like soldiers of a makeshift war. Okay, Tom says. Let us out.
Felix steps to the front door. The housemates gather behind him in the foyer. Mallory watches them close their eyes, then she does the same. In her private darkness, her heart beats louder.
Good luck, she suddenly says, knowing that she would regret it if she didn't.
Thank you, Tom says. Remember what I said. In 12 hours, we'll be back. Are everybody's eyes closed?
The housemates tell them they are. Then the front door opens. Mallory can hear their shoes upon the front porch. Then the door is shut. To Mallory, it feels like something imperative has been locked outside. 12 hours. 18. As the rowboat glides, taken by the water slowly on its own, Mallory cups a handful of river water and washes the wound on her shoulder. It's not an easy task, and the pain is severe.
Are you okay, Mommy?
The boy asks. No questions, she answers. Listen. When the wolf struck her, Mallory saw red as the dark world behind her blindfold erupted into bright pain. Now, as she cleans, she sees purples, grays, and worries that this means she is close to passing out, fainting, leaving the children to fend for themselves. Her jacket is off. Her tank top is bloodied, and she shivers, wondering how much of that is the cold air and how much is the loss of blood. From the right pocket of the jacket, she removes a steak knife. Then she cuts a sleeve off the jacket and ties it tightly around her shoulder. Wolves. By the time the children turned 3, Mallory had gotten complex with her lessons. The pair was instructed to remember 10, 20 sounds in a row before revealing what they thought they were. Mallory would walk through the house, then outside, then upstairs. Along the way, she made noises. Upon returning, the children told her what she had done. Soon, the girl got all 20 right. But the boy was reciting 40-50 sounds, adding the unintentional noises she made on her way to the ones she meant.
You started in our bedroom, Mommy. You sighed before leaving. Then you walked to the kitchen, and on the way, your ankle cracked. You sat in the middle chair at the kitchen table. You put your elbows on the table. You cleared your throat and then went into the cellar. You took the first 4 steps slower than the last 6. You tapped your finger on your teeth.
But no matter how much she's taught them, the children could not be prepared to name the beasts who roamed the woods on the river. The wolves, Mallory knows, have every advantage. So will anything else they encounter. She tightens the tourniquet even more. Her shoulder throbs. Her thighs ache. Her neck aches. This morning she felt strong enough to row the 20-mile trip. Now, wounded, she needs rest. She debates this with herself. She knows that in the old world, a break would have been advised. But stopping out here could mean death. A loud screech from above makes Mallory jump. It sounded like a bird of prey, like it was 100 feet long. Ahead, something splashes. It's brief, but the sound is unnerving. Something moves in the woods to the left. More birds call out. The river is coming to life, and with each piece of evidence of this, Mallory grows more afraid. As the life grows around her, it seems to diminish within.
I'm okay, she lies to the kids. I want us to listen now. That's all. Nothing more.
Rowing again, Mallory tries not to think about the pain.
She doesn't have a clear idea of how much farther she has to go, but she knows it's a lot, at least as far as she's already gone.
Years ago, the housemates were unsure if animals went insane. They talked about it all the time. Tom and Jules took a walk, looking for dogs to guide them. As Mallory and the others waited for them to return, she was overwhelmed with terrible images of rabid animals gone mad. She experiences the same thoughts today. As the river comes alive with nature, she imagines the worst. Just like she did those years ago, before the children were born, when the inertia of the front door reminded you that things like insanity were lurking, whether or not someone you cared about was out there with it.
19. 5 months along now, Mallory's pregnancy is developing. It's the end of the nauseous months, but some queasiness lingers. She experiences heartburn, her legs ache, her gums bleed. Her dark hair is fuller, as is all the other hair on her body. She feels monstrous, distorted, changed. But as she walks through the house, carrying a bucket of urine, none of these things occupy her thoughts like the whereabouts and safety of Tom and Jules. It's astonishing, she thinks, how much she already feels for each of her housemates. Prior to arriving, she heard so many stories of people hurting one another on the way to hurting themselves. Back then, the horrors worried Mallory because of what they meant for herself and her child. Now the safety of the entire house consumes her. It has been 5 hours since the men left, and with each minute passing, the tension has grown, so that now Mallory can't remember if the housemates are repeating their chores or carrying them out for the first time. Mallory sets the bucket by the back door. In a few minutes, Felix will dump it outside. Right now, he's at the dining room table, repairing a chair. Passing through the kitchen, Mallory enters the living room. Cheryl is cleaning the surfaces, the picture frames, the telephone. Mallory notes that Cheryl's arms look pale and thin. In the 2 months she's been living here, their bodies have gotten much worse. They do not eat well. They do not exercise enough. Nobody gets any sun. Tom is outside chasing a better life for them all. But how much better can he make it? And who would let the housemates know if they vanished out there forever? Anxious, Mallory asks Cheryl if she needs any help. Cheryl says no before leaving the room. But Mallory is not alone. Victor sits behind the easy chair, facing the blankets that cover the windows. His head is up. His tongue hangs and he pants heavily. Mallory thinks he is waiting, like she is, for his master to return. As if aware that he is being watched, Victor slowly turns toward Mallory. Then he looks back to the blankets. Don enters the room. He sits in the easy chair, then gets up and leaves. Olympia comes downstairs. She looks for something under the sink in the kitchen. Mallory watches her as she realizes she's already holding what she seeks. She heads back upstairs. Cheryl is back, checking the picture frames. She just did this. She's doing it again. They're all doing it again. Nervously passing through the house, trying to occupy their minds. They hardly speak to one another. They hardly look up. Getting water from the well is one thing, and the housemates worry about one another when they do. But what Tom and Jules are doing is almost impossible to suffer. Mallory stands up and heads for the kitchen. But there is only one place in the house that feels less like the house. Mallory wants to go there. She needs to get away. The cellar.
Felix is in the kitchen, but he does not acknowledge her as she passes. He doesn't say a word as she opens the cellar door and takes the stairs down to the dirt floor beneath. She pulls the string and the light comes on, illuminating the space as it did when Tom showed it to her 2 months ago. But it looks different now. There are fewer cans, fewer colors, and Tom is not here, making notes, counting in rations the amount of time the housemates have before starvation and desperation arrive. Mallory steps to the shelves, distractedly reads the labels. Corn, beets, tuna, peas, mushrooms, mixed fruit, green beans, sour cherries, lingonberries, grapefruit, pineapple, refried beans, vegetable blend, chili peppers, water chestnuts, diced tomatoes, plum tomatoes, tomato sauce, sauerkraut, baked beans, carrots, spinach, varieties of chicken broth. She remembers it feeling crowded down here. The cans once looked like a wall of their own. Now there are holes. Big ones. As if a battle occurred, and their supply was targeted first. Is there enough food to last until the baby comes? If Tom and Jules do not return, will the remaining stock carry her to that dreaded day? What exactly will they do when they run out of canned goods? Hunt? The baby can drink her mother's milk, but only if her mother has eaten. Caressing her belly, Mallory walks to the stool and sits. Despite the cool air down here, she is sweating. The restless footsteps of the housemates are loud. The ceiling creaks. Wiping her hair from her forehead, Mallory leans back against the shelves. She counts cans. Her eyelids feel heavy. It feels good to rest. Then, she drifts. When she comes to, Victor is barking upstairs. She sits up quickly. Victor is barking. What is he barking at? Crossing the cellar quickly, Mallory climbs the stairs and rushes into the living room. The others are already there.
Cut it out! Don yells.
Victor is facing the windows, barking.
What's happening?
Mallory demands, surprised at the panic in her own voice. Don yells at Victor again.
He's just edgy without Jules, Felix nervously says.
No, Cheryl says. He heard something.
We don't know that, Cheryl,
Don snaps. Victor barks again. It's loud, sharp, angry.
Victor, Don says, come on.
The housemates are gathered close to one another in the center of the living room. They are unarmed. If Cheryl is right, if Victor thinks someone is outside the house, what can they do?
Victor! Don yells again. I'm gonna fucking kill you!
But Victor won't stop. And Don, yell as he might, is as afraid as Mallory is.
Felix?
Mallory says slowly, staring at the front window.
You told me there was a garden outside. Are there any tools?
Yes.
Felix is staring at the black blankets, too.
Are they in the house?
Yes.
Why don't you get them?
Felix turns toward her and pauses. Then he leaves the room. Mallory goes through the items of the house in her mind. Every furniture leg is a potential weapon. Every solid object, ammunition. Victor keeps barking, and it's getting worse. And in the brief spaces between his barks, Mallory hears Felix's anxious footsteps, searching for the paltry garden tools that might protect them from whatever it is that's out there. 20. It is noon the next day. Tom and Jules have not returned.
Tom's 12 hours have been more than doubled. And with each one, the emotions within the house grow darker. Victor still sits by the blanketed window. The housemates were up late, gathered together, waiting for the dog to stop barking.
"He'll eventually get us," Don said. "There's no reason to think otherwise. It's end times, people. And if it's a matter of a creature our brains are incapable of comprehending, then we deserve it. I always assumed the end would come because of our own stupidity."
Eventually, Victor did stop barking. Now, in the kitchen, Mallory dunks her hands in a bucket of water. Don and Cheryl went to the well this morning. Each time they knocked to present Felix with a new bucket full, Mallory's heart leapt, hoping, believing it was Tom. She brings the water to her face and runs her wet fingers through her matted, sweaty hair. "God damn it," she says. She is alone in the kitchen. She is staring at the drapes that cover the room's one window. She is thinking of all the infinite, terrible things that could have happened. Jules killed Tom. He saw a creature and dragged Tom to the river by his hair. He held him underwater till he drowned. Or they both saw something. In a house. They destroyed each other. Their ruined bodies lie on the floor in a stranger's den. Or only Tom saw something. Jules tried to stop him, but Tom got away. He's in the woods somewhere. Eating bugs. Eating bark. Eating his own tongue.
"Mallory?"
Mallory jumps as Olympia enters the kitchen.
"What?" "I'm really worried, Mallory. He said 12 hours.
"I know," Mallory says. "We all are." Mallory reaches out to put her hand on Olympia's shoulder and hears Don's voice from the dining room.
"I'm not convinced we should let them back in."
Mallory quickly goes to the dining room.
"Come on, Don," Felix, already in there, says. "How can you mean that? What do you think is going on out there, Felix? You think it's a nice neighborhood we're living in? If anybody's alive out there, they're not surviving on manners, man. Who's to say Tom and Jules weren't kidnapped? They could be hostages right now, and their fucking captors could be asking about our food. Our food. Fuck you, Don," Felix says. "If they come back, I'm letting them in." "If it's them," Don says. "And we're sure there's not a gun to Tom's head on the other side of the door."
"Will you two shut up?" Cheryl says, passing Mallory and entering the dining room.
"You can't be serious, Don," Mallory says.
Don turns toward her.
"You're damn right I'm serious."
"You don't want to let them back in?"
Olympia asks, standing beside Mallory now.
"I didn't say that," Don snaps. "I'm saying there could be bad people out there. Do you understand that, Olympia, or is that too complicated for you?"
"You're a fucking asshole," Mallory says.
For a second, it looks like Don might come at her. "I don't want to have this discussion," Cheryl says.
"It's been over 24 hours, Don says chidingly. "Just go do something else for a minute, will you?" Felix says. "You're making this worse for everybody. We need to start considering a future without them." "It's been a day," Felix says. "Yeah. A day out there."
Don sits at the piano. He looks like he might relent for a moment. Then he continues.
"The good news is that our stock will last longer."
"Don!"
Mallory snaps.
"You have a baby coming, Mallory. Don't you hope to survive?"
"Don, I could kill you," Cheryl says.
Don gets up from the piano bench. His face is red with anger.
Tom and Jules aren't coming back, Cheryl. Accept it. And when you live an extra week because you were able to eat their share of the food and then you were able to eat Victor, too, then maybe you'll understand that there's no such thing anymore as hope.
Cheryl steps toward him. Her hands are in fists. Her face is inches from Don's. Victor barks from the living room. Felix gets between Don and Cheryl. Don shoves him away. As Mallory steps toward them, Felix's hand is raised. He is going to strike Don. He brings his fist back. There is a knock at the front door. 21. Mallory is thinking of Don specifically. Mommy, the boy says, the blindfold is hurting me. Scoop some water out of the river, carefully, Mallory says, and rub it where it hurts. Do not take off your fold. Once, after the housemates had finished dinner, Mallory sat alone with Olympia at the dining room table. They were talking about Olympia's husband, what he was like, his desire to have a child. Don entered the room alone. He didn't care what Olympia was saying.
You ought to blind those babies, he said, the second they come out.
It was as if he'd been thinking about it for a long time, then decided to tell them his decision. He sat down with them at the table and explained himself. As he did, Olympia grew more withdrawn. She thought it was insane, and worse, she thought it was cruel. But Mallory didn't think so. A deep part of her understood what Don was saying. Every moment of her pending motherhood would be centered on protecting the eyes of her child. How much more could be done if this worry were taken away? The seriousness Don wore when he said it conveyed more than cruelty to Mallory. It opened the door to a realm of harrowing possibilities. Things that might need to be done. Actions she might have to take that nobody from the old world could ever be fully prepared to endure. And the suggestion, dark as it was, never entirely vanished from her mind's eye.
It's better, Mommy, the boy says.
Shh, Mallory says. Listen. When the children were 6 months old, she already had them sleeping in their chicken wire cribs. It was night. The world outside the windows and walls was quiet. The house was dark. In the early days with the babies, Mallory would often listen to them breathe as they slept. What may have been a touching observation for some mothers was a study for Mallory. Did they sound healthy? Were they getting enough nutrients from well water and the breast milk of a mother who hadn't had a decent meal in a year? Always, their health was on her mind. Their diet, their hygiene, and their eyes.
You ought to blind those babies the second they come out.
Sitting at the kitchen table in the dark, Mallory understood clearly that the idea did not pose a moral dilemma as much as it presented her with something she wasn't sure she was physically capable of doing. Looking toward the hall, listening to their tiny exhales, she believed Don's idea wasn't a bad one. Every waking moment is spent protecting them from looking outside. You check the blankets, you check their cribs. They won't remember these days when they're older. They won't remember sight. The children, she knew, would not be robbed of anything in the new world if they weren't able to see it to begin with. Rising, she stepped to the cellar door. Downstairs, on the cellar's dirt floor, was a can of paint thinner. Long ago, she'd read the side label and knew the danger the substance posed if it made contact with the eyes. A person could go blind, it said, if they didn't wash it out in 30 seconds. Mallory went to it. She took its handle and brought it upstairs. Do it quick. And do not rinse. They were just babies. Could they possibly remember this? Would they forever fear her, Or would it one day be buried beneath a mountain of blind memories? Mallory crossed the kitchen and entered the dark hall leading to their bedroom. She could hear them breathing within. At their door, she paused and looked into the blackness in which they slept. In this moment, she believed she could do it. Quietly, Mallory entered the bedroom. She set the can on the floor and removed the cloth lids covering their protected cribs. Neither child stirred. Both continued to breathe steadily, as if experiencing pleasant dreams, far away as possible from the nightmares coming to them. Quickly, Mallory unhooked the wire lid to the girl's crib. She bent and lifted the can. The girl breathed steadily. Mallory reached into the crib and lifted the baby's head. She removed the girl's blindfold. The girl started to cry. Her eyes are open, Mallory thought. Pour it. She forced the girl's head closer to the crib's edge and then brought the open can of paint thinner inches from her reddening, crying face. The boy woke behind her and began crying too. Stop it, Mallory said, fending off tears of her own. You don't want to see this world. She tilted the can a little farther and felt the contents slide over her hand before splashing on the floor at her feet. Feeling it on her skin made it real. She couldn't do it. She let go of the baby's head and the girl continued to cry. Setting the can on the ground, Mallory slowly backed out of the bedroom. The children wailed in the darkness. In the hall, Mallory pressed herself against the wall for support and brought a hand to her mouth. Then she threw up. Mommy, the boy says now, on the river. It worked. What worked? Mallory says, torn from her memories. The blindfold doesn't hurt anymore. Boy, she says. No more talking. Unless you hear something. Mallory breathes deep and feels something akin to shame. The pain in her shoulder is worse. She is dizzy with fatigue. A deeper sense of disorientation sets in. It feels like something is very wrong within her. Yet she can hear the children. The boy breathing in front of her. The girl fingering puzzle pieces in the back of the rowboat. They are not blind beneath their folds. And today could end with the possibility of an ever newer world, one in which the children would see things they've never seen before. If she can get them there. 22. Mallory hears something moving on the other side of the door. She hears panting, too. Something is scratching the wood. She and the others are in the foyer. Felix just called out, asked who it was. In the moment between his asking and getting a response, it sounds like the scratching could be made by anything. Creatures, she thinks. But it is not creatures at the door. It is Tom and Jules.
Felix, it's Tom.
Tom!
We're still wearing our helmets, but we're not alone. We found dogs.
Felix, sweating, exhales in a big way. For Mallory, the relief is so rich it hurts. Victor is barking. His tail is wagging. Jules calls to him.
Victor, buddy, I'm back.
All right, Felix says to the housemates inside. Close your eyes. Wait, Don says.
For what?
Felix says.
How do we know they're alone? How do we know they're not being followed? Who knows what could follow them in?
Felix pauses. Then he calls to Tom.
Tom, are you two alone? Just you two and the dogs?
Yes.
It doesn't mean it's true, Don says.
Don, Mallory says impatiently.
If someone wanted to break into this house, they could at any time.
I'm trying to be safe, Mallory.
I know.
I live here, too.